Who we are is how we lead. What are my real values? Who do I want to be? And they are the people who tell you the truth, whose opinion really matters, and who support you when you need a thought partner. You need to do the work that no one else can do.
Welcome back to Standing Tall, Voices in Leadership. I'm your host, Randy Lindquist, and today we have the incredible privilege of welcoming Dr. Debbie McFillone to the show. Debbie is a nationally recognized leadership facilitator, coach, and consultant with a rich background as a teacher, principal, and superintendent. She's the founder of Live Well, Lead Strong, and has dedicated her career to helping leaders bring courage, integrity, and mindfulness into their work. In today's conversation, we'll explore what it means to lead well in today's world, how to build resilience and trust within teams, and why true leadership always starts from within. Whether you're an inspiring leader or a seasoned one, I think you will find inspiration, practical advice, and a renewed sense of purpose in this discussion. Let's stand tall.
We choose to go to the moon.
You can't do it alone.
Team.
Embracing change.
There is no courage without vulnerability.
Being brave.
Attitude reflects leadership, Captain.
Can you rumble with vulnerability?
Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Can you stay in tough things, or do you tap out?
I have a dream.
Learning how to get back up.
And keep moving forward.
Learning how to rise.
Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept and one we continue in.
Let's stand tall. Well, Debbie, it's an honor to have you with me on Standing Tall. Thanks for being here today. I appreciate it.
It is a great pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. I'm going to start with a question about your career, which has included being a teacher, an educational leader, principal, a superintendent, and now a leadership consultant. Mm-hmm. So what kind of pivotal moments in that career path have influenced your transition to this coaching consulting role?
As I had the opportunity, particularly as an area superintendent, and an executive director of curriculum, to really observe leaders who had a lot of impact over an entire district, I really found that I began to question, what does it mean to be a really fine leader? Mm. And so I began to do a little presenting at conferences and that kind of thing. And then when I made a decision to leave the former school district where I was working, it really seemed like a great fit to delve further into leadership. And I decided at that point in my 50s to go back to school. So I decided to study it. So yeah, that's my deal.
That's awesome. Well, we've talked about role models being so important with other people on the show, and it is true. And I think you're a good role model of positive leadership as well.
Well, thank you.
So recognizing that and people you worked with is pretty important to your career journey, right?
Thank you.
Yeah. In your book, Uncommon Leadership, you emphasize courage and integrity. Mm-hmm. How do these qualities manifest in effective school leadership?
Sure. And really, you've named two things that are really the touchstones of what I believe is really fine leadership. They show, I think, in exemplary leaders with the idea of being very trustworthy and always having your actions align with your values, so that there's this seamless transition between what you believe and who you want to be and how you show up. And just this, as I said, alignment, there's a seamless match between what you believe and how you act. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes that shows in giving very straightforward feedback. Sometimes it means you're offering, you're holding and planning a difficult conversation with someone. It really means the integrity to have your values and live them instead of just profess them.
Yeah. Don't just talk about them, but actually live through them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a consulting business called Live Well, Lead Strong, and that has a focus on mindfulness in leadership. Can you share how self-awareness impacts decision-making for leaders?
Sure. And really, it's kind of expanded since I think that was written a bit ago on my website. It's a focus on the self-awareness as it's tied to trustworthiness. And as it's tied to what are my real values and who do I want to be? I always say when people are in a time of trial, you know, how do you want your people to remember you in this time? Mm-hmm. How do you want to show up? Who do you want to have been? And so I think it's that.
Mm-hmm. That's part of that courage piece you mentioned earlier is that you have to have the courage to go through tough times, but showing those values during those tough times, right? And it does take courage to do that.
Yeah.
But so important. So important. Well, you have a new book out. I think you just launched that a few weeks back, called Meeting the Moment. And that talks about leading with conviction. So what strategies do you recommend for leaders facing challenges? We've talked about courage and integrity, but list some other things you might suggest for challenging times.
Sure. I think mentioned several times in the book is this habit of reflection, because we have to continually ground ourselves in who we are and what we believe. And that's where our trust comes from, that high level of self-awareness. I also talk about this balance between knowing who you are and living your own life as you feel you should, but also surrounding yourself with your, what I call the board of directors, your personal board. And they are the people who tell you the truth, whose opinion really matters, and who support you when you need a thought partner, that type of thing. So there are two things I think I recommend very often, the reflection and surrounding yourself with the board of directors. And then the last thing is, you know, do what your mama always told you, get enough sleep, take good care of yourself, take a walk. Do you know, I always laugh and say, my mom always said, Debbie, there aren't too many things in life that two Tylenol and a bubble bath won't cure.
That's awesome. That board of directors you talk about, those thought partners.
Yeah.
Are those internal staff that you work with? Is it external people, colleagues you know and trust? I mean, what do those people look like in terms of your connections?
I think that can really be both.
Okay.
For me, I have really valued a group of longtime women friends, most of whom mentored me as a young principal, and they served as principals too. But also in my board of directors are friends outside my educational circle. You know, I have said for several years, I go to church on Sunday and bang on the piano. And, you know, that's a group of people that couldn't care less that, you know, I was on Tuesday in Cincinnati showing my wares to, you know, a bunch of people in an auditorium. So it's really both. Okay. It is people who ground you in who you are.
Yeah.
And they remind you and so you really value their voice in your life.
Yeah. Those connections are really, really important, I think, for people that are trying to lead in that capacity.
Yeah.
So you've done some work with the Michigan Leadership Institute.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know about some common challenges that aspiring superintendents face and maybe how you help them navigate those. So you have people kind of going into the profession or that leadership role.
Sure.
How do you help them talk through and think about those challenges they're going to face when they get there?
Right. Again, I will sound like a broken record, but I always start when I teach aspiring superintendents, I always start with a session called Who We Are is How We Lead. And I ask them to discern their values, not by circling things on a page, but by thinking about their own leadership formation, who formed me, and what is the message that I carry from those people, right? Mm-hmm. So first of all, I think our best leaders are deeply grounded in the self-awareness and trustworthiness. And then I try to ground aspiring superintendents in the idea of what do our followers need? And they need from us, according to Gallup, this hopefulness, offering hope, compassion, stability, and back to trustworthiness. And so we talk about not always the technical skills, because many people can do technical skills, and the technical skills will change radically over time. But who you are, and are you offering trustworthiness? Are you showing compassion? Are you bringing hope? And are you evidencing stability for your people?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
I also, my mantra to superintendents as well as building leaders is, you need to do the work that no one else can do.
Mm.
You need to, as a building principal, you are the person who can observe a teacher and offer feedback. You don't need to be the person who is signing time cards and that type of thing.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we focus on the adaptive work that only leaders can do rather than the technical work, which we need to look at delegating, giving clear direction and trusting our people to do.
Yeah, yeah. And you can get bogged down in that so easily.
That word.
You know? And as a new person coming to the job, that would be very, you could get
right.
grounded by that quickly, I think.
Very much. And I try to, you know, I try to always be relevant and very current and timely with what I teach. But I also do go back to some of the classics. And of course, the classic Stephen Covey, we need to operate in quadrant two as much as we often can. You know, what is important but not urgent?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Great. Mm-hmm. Well, you also work with MEMSPA.
I do.
Elementary and Middle School Principal Association in the state and a program called Leadership Matters. So you've been running that, I think, for a long time, right?
15 years.
Wow.
Closed our 15 years.
Must be a pretty good series, I would say.
Graduated almost 400 adults.
Oh, wow. Right? That's incredible. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about how that program's evolved over that time, 15 years. A lot's changed in education and leadership. Yeah. How's that program evolved to help prepare the next wave of principals?
Yeah. When I was in graduate school working on my doctorate in courage and integrity in exemplary leaders, I had the opportunity to actually write the program with a writing partner, Nancy Colflesh. And we began the program and taught it for five years together. And the focus is on courage and integrity, collegiality, the idea of how do you form your groups and sustain and nurture strong groups together. It is all about the leadership skills that you don't learn in schools. It's around reflection, and it's around some technical pieces, but mostly around adaptive work. And so the program has evolved because our students have evolved. And so after Nancy taught with me for 5 years, I transitioned and for the last 10 years have taught with my colleague, Derek Wheaton. And Derek and I have a great partnership because he has an early childhood background and I have a K-12 and central office background.
Okay.
So the program has evolved as the needs of our people have evolved. And what we have seen in the last 2 or 3 years is more attention to social emotional pieces in school.
Very important.
More how do we talk about emotional poverty? And also toward the well-being of the people with whom we work. And how do we give them the skills to strengthen their people as they lead? How do they do that? Mm-hmm. And so we have altered the program really to meet the needs. For the last 2 years, we've had guest sessions and had people create sessions for an hour or two on AI, because that's what our people need. Yeah. I know they need to be watching that and doing it and learning about it. And so, yeah, we have kept our themes of the courage and integrity, the reflection, the coaching, the collegiality, those types of things. But we have adapted our resources because they need to be adapted, and we've adapted our topics that flow into those pieces.
To new and upcoming challenges that they're going to face, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to switch to something called Opportunity to Thrive, which is something you're also involved in, and it's about well-being. We know that's critical in today's environment, right? Mm-hmm. But that's really about educators in a more global sense. Right. And I want to know what initiatives have proven most effective in that coaching and that resilience piece and Opportunity to Thrive. Talk about that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Opportunity Thrive was begun 8 years ago by Executive Director Rebecca Skipper. And she, 9 years ago, was a teacher herself, and she became highly concerned about the level of burnout and depletion that she saw in the people who are in our schools. And so she came to me, and as well as other advisors, and said, would you work with me on developing an organization, a nonprofit, that begins to address that the needs of well-being of the adults in our schools? And Opportunity Thrive, I have continued to serve on the board and currently serve as president. We are a unique nonprofit in that we are the only nonprofit in the state of Michigan that addresses the well-being of adults. Mm-hmm. There are lots of people addressing the well-being of our students. Mm-hmm. But the Lighthouse program of Opportunity Thrive, there are actually 3 tiers of programs, but the Lighthouse program is the well-being coaching that is done.
Okay.
We have probably 40 coaches that are trained, and they train in 1 2-day training session, but then they have monthly training sessions also it's like a clinical talking about another skill or what are you encountering in the people with whom you're working. So we continue to update and nurture and maintain their coaching skills. But people in school districts have the opportunity for individual coaching. Sometimes it's in person. If they choose, it's on Zoom or by a phone call. And we obligate to 10 hours of that individual coaching.
Wow.
Yeah. And sometimes people choose 20, 30 minute sessions.
Mm-hmm.
It can be, you know, we shape it the way that they would like it. And so what we have found in our research, because we've partnered with Hope College all the way through to collect data and research about our people, and what we have found is that close to 90% of our people have felt affirmed and empowered and have given their career another chance and begun to advocate for themselves because of the Opportunity Thrive coaching that they have received.
10 hours of coaching is a lot for a teacher or someone in that capacity to receive.
Yeah.
And if you're having a rough day or a rough go for a while, you have someone to talk to and keep you kind of going. That's really critical.
It is. And we have a process. We really start with deconstructing, you know, what is the issue that's really pressing on you? And then reconstructing. How do you construct a different response?
Mm-hmm.
And what can you control? Mm-hmm. What is not within your control? What do you do about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds amazing.
It is. Oh, it's so rewarding.
Yeah, I bet. Mm-hmm. So talked about trust earlier a little bit and how important that is from leadership's perspective, but wondering about how you think fostering that culture of trust really truly could influence student outcomes. Like building that culture.
Isn't that so important?
What's the impact you think having on student outcomes?
Mm-hmm. I think it is all around some basic things that people wouldn't be surprised. It is around a growth mindset rather than we are here. It is not about artificial. It's not about artificial harmony. Aren't we a great school? Don't we all get along? And aren't we all right? Mm-hmm. It is about a brave culture. And I love that phrase from the literature. It is about stepping in when things are difficult rather than avoiding when things are difficult. And so it's holding data meetings where the focus is, how can I support you? I've got you. Let's take an honest look at your data.
Yeah.
What is needed, right? Rather than shaming or blaming or, well, these kids, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's the brave culture and it's modeling. It's actually teaching teachers how to have those conversations to say, you know, I'm wondering what you're thinking right now. Or I haven't heard from the perspective of a third grade person. Can you tell, how would this fit for your kids? Or, you know, I'm wondering whether or not you might have a question about this from a social studies content point of view. How's this fitting for you? It's cultivating those brave conversations and really shaping this culture that is brave rather than a culture that is artificial.
Yeah.
That's a trustworthy culture. We are not wasting any time in pretense that we're all good. We are every year wanting to improve, wanting to be better, looking at our kids and what they need.
Yeah. And it's okay if the data shows something different or if we're not all good. You got to be able to talk about that in a trusting environment to move forward.
Yep. Yeah. I love the protocol. Here's what, so what, but the most important thing is now what?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are you going to do about it? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've had the great honor of having you and Steve Seward working this year in West Michigan with us in Muskegon County as well as counties around us. You've been providing professional development for principals, and we've called that igniting passionate leaders, trying to really support our principals and keep them going strong in their schools. The foundation of that has been around empowering people, building your culture, and optimizing your systems. Right. Those are the three kind of foundational pieces you've talked about almost every session.
Yeah.
So talk about this work here in West Michigan you've been doing and the importance of those foundational items for building leaders.
Yeah. And if you think about those three, they actually come from National Association of Elementary School Leaders, the empowering your people, building your culture, and working on your
systems.
Optimizing your system. Yeah. But if you look at two of those three are adaptive. That's adaptive leadership, where it's going to take, again, your self-awareness, your trustworthiness, your empathy for people, your compassion for people. So we have offered over the course of our sessions the opportunities to think about how do you build that trustworthy culture and how do you empower your people, a shared leadership model. right? How do you build your culture so that, again, it's a brave culture, it's a collaborative culture? Because today, no one can do this themselves.
No.
We must have those strong teams in place. So
right.
We focused on that and tried to give people protocols and ideas and modeling for those strong teams. And then optimizing your system really goes back to, are you in quadrant one all of the time where everything is urgent and important? Or what can you do to design routines, to have procedures in place? What do you need to delegate? Those kinds of questions that really exemplary leaders know to ask.
Yes.
It's been wonderful to sort that through with people from the variety of the four counties that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been great. Mm-hmm. And the principals I've talked to have all talked about, they walk away with something, a small nugget at every session.
I'm so glad.
That's very practical that they can use. You've helped them talk a lot about tough conversations, how to work through those, some protocols for that.
Mm-hmm.
But that brave piece has always been at the top of the list, right?
Mm-hmm.
Always.
Yep.
So, well, looking ahead, what emerging trends do you foresee in educational leadership and how should leaders prepare for those?
Sure. Well, I think we're going to have to be, again, responsive to the needs that we are seeing in our communities and with our students. And so certainly we know education is going to have to look lots different than it has been in the traditional way, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
We can't continue to have what we call those cemetery rows where everybody sits still and is silent and straight row. And we know, and I've heard wonderful stories on your podcast, Randy, about people using AI in different ways with students these days and that type of thing. We know that individualization is going to be very important. We know that our kids are really demanding, as are our communities, education that is relevant. What do they need to face problem solving and working as a part of a team and those types of things when we can't predict the careers that they're going to face?
Yes.
And so we're going to have to be adaptable and flexible, and we really are going to have to focus on what our students need and serving them well. And I think if we keep that servant need, you know, in focus, our primary thing, we'll continue to learn how to serve them.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We've talked a lot on the show about transferable skills. Like, how do we build transferable skills in students that'll help them no matter what career they go into, whether they know about it yet or not, whether it exists or not.
Right.
Those transferable skills are great for any student to have going into the world of work.
Right.
Yeah.
And I knew the director at the Nuevo Tech Center, and their whole, all of their workplace training goals for their students were transferred into their whole discipline thing. It was really workplace goals.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, how will you be successful in the workplace? You'll be on time.
Mm.
You'll have your materials.
Right.
It's the same thing in their classrooms.
Yeah, for sure.
They have a wonderful tech center program there.
Well, I would agree that we need to see change in our classrooms and our schools, and I'm hoping we do see that sometime in the near future, especially in today's world with the new technologies we see and everything else to individualize learning for kids.
Right.
Well, it's that time. It's that time for rapid fire. Are you ready for this?
I will sit up straight and try to be
all right. Here. Well, these are kind of some fun questions to ask at the end of my guests to respond to. Mostly not related to education at all, but just some fun things to ponder. So
I'll do my best.
All right, here we go with rapid fire. If you had to give a TED talk on something other than leadership or education, what topic would you choose?
Oh, I would choose how to be a famous music performer, and where do you find fame and fortune?
Okay, wow.
Yeah.
I like that. I'm going to have to join that one. I think you should do that on TED Talk someday. Early bird or night owl?
Early bird.
Okay, all right.
Mm-hmm.
The world needs those. I'm not one of them, but that's okay.
Yeah.
All right. Mm-hmm. What's the strangest thing you've ever eaten?
Oh, what a great question. The strangest thing I've ever eaten, do you know, we actually were down south and I did have a bite in Florida of alligator.
Oh.
Yes. It came kind of like a little chicken McNugget and it came a little
like chicken, right?
My son-in-law ordered it and I ate it.
So would you eat it again, do you think?
Probably not. But, you know, it's good to know that you've done
it. You say you've done that, right? Exactly. How about skydiving or scuba diving?
Oh, do you know, I love the ocean, the sea, so I would probably scuba.
That's great. How about a guilty pleasure TV show or movie you secretly love?
Let's think. I'd say, I have to think a moment. Elspeth.
Elspeth, I'm not sure I'm aware of that one.
It's about a woman who is really neurodivergent. She's an attorney, and yeah.
I'll have to look that one up.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah, I learned something new today.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a tough one. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
I'd say yes.
Yes?
It's meat surrounded by bread.
Oh, what a great definition.
That's my criteria.
I would have said no until I heard your definition. Now I might say yes. That's a really good response. Mm-hmm. All right, controversial topic. We had this for our last guest, and I've had a lot of comments on it. When you replace the toilet paper roll, is it the flap over or the flap under?
It is definitely under all the time.
All right.
Every bathroom in my house.
I knew I liked you for a reason.
Absolutely.
That's right. That's good. Do you take selfies?
Not too often.
No?
I do when I am with one of my three grandchildren.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Cats, dogs, or neither one of them?
Both.
Both?
Uh-huh. We've had both.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got to find the ones that harmonize together, though, right?
No. Right. Yeah.
Last but not least, what is one nugget you would give to any educator who is striving to be in a leadership role in the future?
I would say deeply know yourself and ground yourself in your courage. Ground yourself in your courage.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Absolutely perfect. Well, Debbie, it's been a pleasure having you on Standing Tall. I admire your work. I admire what you do. I appreciate the connections you make and the impact you have on our leaders and educators. So keep it up. Thank you.
Well, it's been a joy to be here. Thanks so much, Randy.
You got it. All right. Let's bring in producer Ben for a little breakdown of that session with Debbie McFallone. What'd you think, Ben?
Oof, I was just glad I got to be in the room, man. Usually you just take this to your conferences and fancy Aquafina water, and I got to be here and kind of absorb some of that in real time. So many huge takeaways. I think the first one was her topic of that, like board of directors, like surrounding yourself with a group of thought partners. And that was so crucial. And Carmen actually said something in the last episode where she talked about you can't do something you haven't seen before.
Right.
Leadership is lonely and you have to have those.
Those connections are so important as a leader. And it can be staff within your building that you connect with and or other colleagues outside. But you've got to have those connections to really thrive in your role as a leader.
Totally. And it can help you have that courage in who you are so that you can have that brave culture that you set.
I was just going to say, the bravery part she talked about, that was pretty critical too and important to understand is it does take a brave culture.
Yeah. And that I had always wondered your question on how does trust actually impact student achievement? That's my $1 million question. Like, all right, yeah, I'd rather work in a trusting culture, but does it really help kids get better at math? And her answer was straight fire when she said, good teaching is about taking risks and learning from being reflective on when you get it right, when you get it wrong. And you can't do that if you don't trust your boss because you're just going to put on a show.
Right.
And
it can't be superficial. It can't be surface level. It's got to be a true trusting culture to have those tough conversations about performance and everything else to be able to break through and take that next step.
Totally. Yeah. You could have all the parades and fog machines and fun times, but if you don't actually have that trust, you're not going to take risks and learn from your mistakes and stuff. So,
right.
That was awesome, man.
Don't forget about the disco ball also. Everything needs a disco ball, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I hope you all enjoyed that episode of Standing Tall with Debbie McFallone. She's a great individual. She leads well in her conversations with principals, and she has had impact in terms of helping leaders do their jobs in a better way and building those trusting relationships. So hope you enjoyed. Until next time, keep standing tall.